Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob Enyart Live. I am your host, Dominic Enyart. Bob Enyart is on assignment, so I'll be filling in for him. I wanted to talk a little bit about the left. And the left is winning the culture right now. And they are winning in such a dominant fashion. It's almost not even a competition. It's like they just go where they want, take what they want, and then they just move on with little to no resistance. And I've been thinking about that a lot recently. Of course, as Christians, we have the victory that really matters. We have the victory over sin and death because it is Christ in us and it is no longer us. But Christ has won that battle. So in that sense, we have the victory. Take like Christians in the Colosseum, for example. They lost their culture war, but they had the important victory, the victory that was lasting. And that lasting victory is still the same victory that we have today as Christians. The same victory those Christians who are being killed in the Colosseum had is the same victory we have today. But now with that said, we obviously have the important victory that's just, you can't even compare it to the victory of the culture. But with that said, it is important that we need to win the culture war. The culture war is extremely important, even for the sake of just evangelism. And you know, even if we can't win back the culture, at least we have to start fighting just for the sake of fighting. Because it seems that we have just bent over backwards, giving everything to the left without any resistance, anything to even slow their progress. And I've been thinking about this a lot, and I want to suggest an attitude shift towards the battle, and I would like to break down the left and some of their strategies, figure out what is it about them that makes them win. How do they win so consistently on so many issues? And maybe we can take some strategies from their playbook. Obviously, a lot of the strategies of the left are, you know, immoral. We'll want to avoid those, but maybe we can look at some of the tactics and be a little bit more cunning in how we try to win back the culture. Specifically, extremism or being radical. The left, obviously, I don't need to tell you. You listen to Bob Enyart Live. You know about the left. But they are so extreme and so radical, and they are winning not in spite of their extremism, but because of their extremism. They are 24/7 extremists, all the way hardcore leftists, and that is how they win. I remember maybe 5 years ago, there was a video that went a little bit viral of a feminist, and she was tired of finding oppression everywhere. That was the whole video about how it's so hard to find oppression everywhere, every single day of her life. She was just looking for oppression so that she could find it and be upset about it. And I remember everyone was making fun of her, myself included. I was like, if you're so tired of looking for oppression, just stop looking for oppression and take the day off. You know, you'll have a good day. Watch some TV, eat some Cheetos. It'll be good. And as we were making fun of her, I don't think we realized, but she was right. She was trying to win the culture. And feminism has grown as a movement because they do not take breaks. They make it a lifestyle, and they are so faithful to their religion of feminism, and they just push nonstop, and they look for oppression in everything. And that, you know, that 24/7 barrage of just shoving ideas down people's throats just over and over and over and over again, it really has an impact. And so that idiot feminist who is just looking for oppression wherever she went, even if there was no oppression to be found, she was right and we were wrong. Because her group of people, feminists used to be by and large made fun of by just everybody, but that group of people, they have won the war. Going as hard as they can, no breaks, full blown, just trying to find oppression in everything, and they've convinced the majority of people of their entire platform. And it's almost like a religion they worship. Like feminism is their religion that they just, extremism is their religion that they just love it. And they're so faithful to their religion. It almost reminds me of, I think it's in Jeremiah chapter 2, God gets really angry at Israel, and he's making a case against Israel. And he says, why is it that Israel, you people, you're the only people who you have a real God who does real miracles and really loves you, and you are so unfaithful, yet all these other people who have fake gods, who are made out of rocks, who don't do anything, those people are so faithful to their fake gods who do nothing for them. Yet you, Israel, who have a real God, you are so unfaithful. And that just reminds me of this, is that these idiot feminists have the dumbest ideas, but they are so faithful in trying to promote their idiot ideas that they have won the culture. And you know what? They deserve it, because they have fought much harder than we have fought. They have made it their lifestyle. And I believe that as conservatives, we need to recognize that they make it their lifestyle to just every day be coming back and coming back and coming back and fighting the fight and fighting the fight and just wearing down conservatives and wearing down Republicans. And we need to realize that that's their strategy, and that we need to adopt that strategy and make fighting for basic truths our lifestyle. Make it a lifestyle to fight for conservative values. Make it a lifestyle to fight for biblical values. Now, if you've noticed, liberals do not reach to the middle for voters like Republicans do, meaning that if you take the radical, like AOC, Bernie Sanders, what's the other lady's name, the Pocahontas lady, I can't remember her name, but if you look at them, they are so radical, and they are just going as hard to the left as they possibly can, and they aren't thinking, okay, I need to be a little bit more moderate to try and like win over the middle of the crowd. They don't think that way. They think, I just need to go as hard to the left as I can, and that'll make everybody love me. And I don't know if it's a calculated move, but it works. So the radical AOCs and Bernie Sanders, they are the people who got Biden elected because he seemed to be, you know, quote unquote, moderate. Whereas you take Republicans, say like Trump. He believed he was a Republican. He had his Republican base, but you know what? That wasn't quite enough. He had the Republicans and the conservatives, but that wasn't quite enough. He needed some of the moderates to join him in order to win the election. So what did he do? He changed his politics just a little bit, just to win over some of the moderates in the middle. And in doing so, he became a little bit more liberal. And Republicans have this idiotic notion. They believe that if they win a popularity contest, it means you will win the culture. But in reality, if you win a popularity contest, it means that the culture has won you. So the more and more you reach into the middle to grab from that pool of people, the more and more you have to go to the middle and go to the left from the right. So what would have been more appropriate for Trump to do is to say, you know what, I don't care about winning this election. That's what the left does. They say, we don't care about winning the election. We care about our goals and our idealism. And that pulls people to you. When you have strong principles, it pulls people towards you. So what would have been better for Trump to do is to say, you know what, we might lose this election, but I'm going to stand for the right to life for the unborn child. I'm going to stand and say, you know, homosexuality is a sin. I'm going to stand and say transgenderism is a mental illness. And I'm going to embrace these conservative principles. And I'm going to move further to the right. I'm going to be more Republican, more conservative. And I'm going to try and stand for what I believe in. I don't think Trump believes in any of these things, but I'm just kind of building my ideal candidate out of Trump. But so he could have said, I believe in these ideals, so this is what I'm going to stand for. And he might have lost the election, but at least he wouldn't be moving more towards the left in trying to reach that pool of undecided voters who are in the middle. You know that saying how does it go? It's like a conservative is just a liberal from 10 years ago. And I think this is why. I think it's because Republicans love to try and reach moderate voters, and that just pulls us to the left. Election year after election year, we can become more and more liberal because we're moving more and more towards the middle. So it is extremism. It's the AOCs and Bernie Sanders. They're going more to the left, which pulls the people in the middle a little bit more to the left because the border of the left is a little bit further left. And then the Republicans, they move a little bit over to the left, so they're able to reach that people in the middle. And then the border on the far right moves a little bit to the left. So it's just a disaster all around. And the right seems completely oblivious to it. Now, there are some examples of radicalism on the right that has helped us. And, you know, it is hard for me to give an example because I'm already so far on the right that it's rare that I see someone who's more on the right than I am. But a solid example might be Westboro Baptist Church. You know, they have the signs that say, you know, God hates, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on air, the F slur for homosexuals. By the way, I don't know why Christians find that word offensive, especially. It'd be like if we had a slur against pedophiles or against rapists. I don't know why Christians get upset about that, because it's like you have this terrible person and you're mocking them. Seems like a good thing. Anyways, more on that in a little bit. But so you have these people, Westboro Baptist, they have signs that say God hates the F slur for gay people. And they made the pro-life group, or I suppose anti-abortion group that I'm part of, seem much more reasonable. So I consider myself part of Abolish Human Abortion. And, you know, we'll go out and we hold signs in front of Planned Parenthood trying to convince moms to not kill their kids, or hold signs at public events saying, hey, abortion is wrong, take some literature, let's explain. And, you know, we might be considered radicals, but Westboro Baptist, what they've done, and I don't especially like their methods a whole ton, but what they have done has definitely helped me out a ton personally. Because when I'm trying to explain to my friends what I do with Abolish Human Abortion, they always look at me like I'm completely insane. And then, which I'm going to go on a tangent about real quick. But then I say, oh, don't worry, I'm not like the Westboro Baptist people. I'm more polite than they are. And all my friends, they say, oh, okay, you know, that's more reasonable than, at least you're not Westboro Baptist. And so Westboro Baptist, their insanity with how harshly radical they are has made Abolish Human Abortion seem much more reasonable because, hey, you know what? At least you're not Westboro Baptist. Got a quick tangent, you know, a little side note. I've been so frustrated in my life talking to Christian friends that I feel like I have to explain myself more to Christians for standing up for the unborn, saying like, hey, you know what? I go out and I say, don't murder babies. And they look at me like I'm insane. It's really frustrating. So if you're a Christian out there, someone tells you they do like street ministry or they hold signs or something, like look at them like they are awesome, because it is super discouraging when you tell a Christian you're out there evangelizing and they like question you. So that's just a little side note. But so another example, getting back on topic, leaving politics aside, let's consider this idea of extremism, and let's consider it in the light of theology. Say, take open theism and Arminianism and Calvinism. So it used to be that Arminians and Calvinists like hated each other with such a incredible passion, and they were just so against each other. You know, it is better today in America, but it used to be that people got killed over this issue. And so obviously today we've gotten a little bit better about it as Christians, but there's still a big divide, you know, Arminianism and Calvinism. But then open theism comes along. And what did open theism do? Open theism made Arminians seem much more acceptable to Calvinists. So I'll talk to a Calvinist and they'll tell me about how much they think Arminians are dumb. And then I'll explain open theism to them and say, I'm an open theist, here's why. And then they say, wow, that's way more dumb than Arminianism. The Arminians are bad, but at least they're not open theists. And so in that way, they become more acceptable because of our quote-unquote radical theology. So the key phrase here is, at least you're not XYZ. That is the key phrase. So Biden, well, I don't like Trump. I hate liberals, but at least you're not AOC. Okay, I'll vote for Biden. Abolish human abortion. I don't like activism. I don't like abortion, but you know, at least you're not Westboro Baptist. Arminians, you know, at least you're not open theists. So that at least you're not XYZ, that is the key phrase. So being radical pulls the culture towards you. Probably the best example currently is, you know, BLM, like Burn, Loot, Murder, Black Lives Matter. They are so unyielding in their radicalism, and even to the point of violence. And that violence, it does pull people towards them, because that culture shift further to the left, that moves more and more people to the left. But what I said earlier about, you know, we want to be careful to not take immoral tactics from the left, that is one. We do not use violence and terrorism as a tool to get people to agree with us. We do not have that authority. That is evil, wrong, and immoral for them to do. And if we were to take that tactic from them of rioting and burning and looting to accomplish a political end or a cultural end, that would be immoral. And violence is completely unacceptable. Now, real quick, I'm just going to go on a tangent about fear and how the left loves to use fear in all areas to, you know, accomplish their end. They love to use fear of losing your kids, fear of losing your job, fear of, you know, having your house burnt down. That's a pretty big fear that BLM likes to employ. And that's a tactic that they employ because it works on them, because the left in general, they're usually pretty weak and pretty pathetic people. So if someone like points a gun at their head and says, believe what I believe, or I'm going to kill you, they say, okay, yeah, I'll believe that, just because I'm afraid and I don't have any courage. So that works on them. So they assume it will work on us. But we must teach them that bullying will not sway us, because we aren't weak like they are, and we aren't pathetic like they are. And burning and looting and murdering will only radicalize us stronger against their wickedness. And that if they appeal to our fear, they will awaken our courage, and they will awaken our drive to fight against them with all the power that we have. Fear is... it is a valuable tool. So even Jesus uses fear. He uses the fear of hell. And that is a really, really scary thing, hell. And Christ was not afraid to talk about hell. I'm actually going to go on a rabbit trail off of my tangent here for a second. But I was attending Secret Church by David Platt this year. And something that he was talking about a healthy fear of hell. And the way he was describing it was, imagine if you touched a hot coal for just a second and you pulled away and you shake your hand because it's really hot, and then it hurts for the next like 4 hours, and how annoying and painful that is. And then imagine you have to just hold on to that coal for, you know, 10 minutes, or hold on to a hot stove for 10 minutes. And then that hurts so bad. It hurts your hand so bad. You can't imagine anything more excruciating than that. Then imagine there's a fiery oven, and you have to walk in and lay down in that fiery oven for 15 minutes. It's like that 15 minutes would seem like an eternity. It would seem like the most unbearable agony that you've ever experienced. Like 400 degrees lying down, your skin is just bubbling up with burns and oozes, and it's just the most awful, terrible thing. That's for 15 minutes. Then imagine you have to do that for an hour. How incredible the agony would be. And then imagine you completed that hour and then found out you had 23 more hours to go. And it's just the misery and the pain and the suffering. And then imagine you had to do that for a year, and how terrible and awful that would be. And then 1,000 years, and then 1,000,000 years, and you were just in that complete state of agony and pain for a million years, and then even consider all eternity in that state of pain and suffering and hatred and emotional torment. That is what hell is. And hell is a terrifying, horrifying, awful thing that we need to be extremely afraid of. And now bringing it back, tying it in, if we want to use fear, let's use fear that Jesus used and warn people against that, rather than using fear how a terrorist group like BLM might use that fear in burning down someone's house, burning them alive, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails at police, you know, XYZ. So if we want to use fear, be biblical about how you use it, warn people against hell. Don't use it in an evil way of being a violent person to accomplish a political goal. That makes you a terrorist. We must condemn violence and rebuke it to the fullest extent. And we must call for a peaceful dialogue. Now, with that said, peaceful, I'm not saying we can be lukewarm. We either have to be hot or cold. Being lukewarm is not acceptable. You know, be hot or cold, do not be lukewarm, or I will spit you out. The, you know, quote unquote homosexual conservatives, spit them out. Spit out the Dave Rubens of the conservative movement. I'm talking to you specifically, Daily Wire. You cannot beat the liberals by adopting their entire party platform. We cannot take liberal ideology and make it our platform. We cannot take arguments and lofty opinions raised against God and then make those our party platform. You know, you might object and say, you know, everyone has sinned. So when someone wants to work with us, let's just take them. We need more people. Well, again, with the more people, you're pulling more from that pool that's in the middle. And what you're doing is you're making yourself more like them and more like the left. So you ask, like, where is the line where we draw the cutoff? And, you know, I'm not exactly sure where that line is, but I know it's somewhere before, quote, like, Jesus taught they should be put to death. You know, like, if Jesus taught that someone should be put to death, maybe they shouldn't be one of the thought leaders of the conservative movement. There's an idea for you. We don't want liberal extremists, homosexuals like Dave Rubin to be at the forefront of the conservative movement. That is just a recipe for disaster. In no world is that good. In no world is he qualified. And in no world should we listen to him, because his perversion has made him unqualified to be a voice in the Republican Party. With that said, I do want to make a little bit of a clause. If you have a, you know, a homosexual who's repented and who has come to Christ and is repented and he's fighting with sin, definitely we should encourage him in his walk with the Lord and try and support him through that. But that does not mean that we give all homosexuals a pass to just become the thought leaders of the conservative movement. So we support recovering homosexuals and we love them. But that does not give a free pass that perversion can lead our thought lives. So we must spit out the Republicans who buy into homosexuality. They are not with us. We must spit out the Republicans who buy into Black Lives Matter. They are not with us. We must spit out Republicans who advocate exceptions with abortion. You know, it's not just that they're dumb. They actually are the enemy. We must fight against them. We must realize that they are the enemy that we are fighting against. Just because they have an R after their name does not mean that they are our friends. You know, Republicans are thinking of having Bruce Jenner run in California. You know, we need to spit him out. He is the enemy. You cannot defeat an entire party by adopting their party platform. That is a losing strategy. So how about we try and radicalize ourselves a little bit and say, you know what, we're not going to accept your entire party platform. That's just a little bit of extremism that might help us start winning the culture again, is saying, no, we're not going to support transgenders running as politicians in California. That's a potential start for you. So spit him out. He is the enemy. You know, and speaking of politicians in general, let's just come up with this rule. Let's say guilty until proven innocent as a politician. They are all bad time and time again. They're all bad, all guilty. Be much more cynical of them. So Ron DeSantis, for example, I've seen a few clips of him, and from what I saw, I like him. There was that 60 Minutes scandal with him. I feel like he handled that well, and he fought back, which I thought was pretty cool. But let's just assume that he's bad until he is proven good. So until he says, you know, I stand for the child's right to life in the womb with zero exceptions, no matter what, that'll be my main platform, is that I will fight for the child's right to life, no exceptions, zero, none, ever, no matter what. Only once we get to that point do we lend him our support. So guilty until proven innocent. So if there's a pro-life bill, assume it's bad. Assume it has exceptions. Nothing is good enough. Always fight for more. Always fight for better. Always fight for a higher standard. Always fight for God's standard. Always fight for the biblical standard. Be as cynical as you can. Nothing is good enough. And just make it a lifestyle, make it a 24/7 thing to be looking for problems with Republicans and looking to better ourselves and be looking to make ourselves closer to God, and take biblical ideas and shove them down our politicians' throats over and over and over and over again, and radicalize ourselves in service of God. All right, now, by the way, follow me on Instagram, Dom6126. That's Dom6126. I just started a YouTube channel, extremely, extremely small YouTube channel, but I've been having fun with that, and I'm planning on posting there a little bit more. I'll link to both of those in today's show summary. I was thinking a little bit about, you don't know too much about who I am. You might think I'm coming off a little bit harsh on the homosexuals and on the pro-aborts. If you think that's the case, I would like to put a challenge to you. I want you to read an article written by my dad, Bob Enyart. You can read it at kgov.com/nice. And if that piques your interest, we here at Bob Enyart Live, we sell a product called Nicer Than God. And the premise is that today Christians are nicer than God. Well, at least they try to be. And, you know, if I'm being totally honest, that has got to be in my top three favorite products here at Bob Enyart Live. It's either Nicer Than God, The Plot. I really like The Plot. The Plot has helped me a lot. Or maybe one of our Open Theism resources, but that might be, third place might be tied with our TV Classics. I do not understand why more people don't get the TV Classics. That is like one of the best things in the entire world. Highly, highly recommend TV Classics. All extremely hysterical, like peak comedy, incredible TV. Highly, highly recommend. But so there's today's little plug for a product. Do recommend Nicer Than God. We'll put that up as today's resource on the show page today. I do want to read a verse that we cover in that resource, and then also tell a story about a Project Frontlines that my church was involved in when I was a little bit younger. An encounter that my dad had with a lesbian couple. But before that, let me read this verse. This is Psalm 139, verses 19 through 22. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, you bloodthirsty men, for they speak against you wickedly. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate them, O Lord? Get this. This is David, a man after God's own heart. Do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate you? Do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. Is that a flawed hatred or is that perfect hatred? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. So that is one of the verses that we cover in our Nicer Than God seminar. Check it out. I listened through it maybe about a year ago, and it was both extremely fun and extremely educational. So highly, highly recommend you check that out. But quick story. So at Project Frontlines, this is an anti-abortion event where we go to a high school, bring some signs, some literature, just say, hey, don't murder babies. And it's a lot of fun, get into a lot of really good conversations. But I remember this because I'm reading this verse and it says, do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate you, and loathe those who rise up against you? And that rise up against you is what really makes me remember this story of being at this anti-abortion event, and there's these two high school girls. They were older than me at the time. They were probably about 17, and they walked in front of my dad as he was ministering to some kids, and they started, it's so gross, I don't even want to say it, but they started like kissing just to gross everybody out. And they were doing that just to be offensive. You know, we talk about how the left, they push on every front, on every occasion, at every turn. This was another example of that. And they ended up getting into a conversation with my dad, and they talked about how much they loved each other, yada, 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 all this perversion. And what my dad said to them just astounded me. And he looked at them and said, "You don't love her." And that caused them to be so angry. And like, you could almost see the veins popping out of their foreheads. They were so angry. He said, "No, you do not love her." And they let him speak, which was surprising, but he said, "You don't love her. You," and then he pointed at one of the girls, "you are simply using her," and then pointed at the other girl, "you are using her as a tool to express your hatred of God. That you are using her as a tool. That is what you are doing." And their silence spoke in volumes. They went silent, and they just turned around, and they walked away. They didn't say anything after that. And, you know, I don't know what happened to them. I pray for them. But thinking about this verse that says, like, "I loathe those who rise up against you." And it's like you take these complete perverts who just use each other as tools to express their hatred of God. And it is appropriate to have righteous anger against them. So that's what we go through in the Nicer Than God study. Highly, highly recommend. 11 out of 10. I think it's either an audio CD you can get, or I think we sell it as a audio download. It's good to just pop it in your car when you're driving around town. Highly recommend. Check it out. All right, I think I'm about out of time. That'll do it for me. I should be back tomorrow. Until then, make standing up for truth your lifestyle. God bless and Godspeed.